This is Phil Ferrand, and as you can tell, my car is already started. There's a reason for that. And the reason is, I didn't want to take the chance that it would not start by turning it off, getting all the recording equipment set up, and, and then doing my standard, this is Phil Ferrand. Because there's something wrong with my car, and I'm just, and my windshield is really, really messy, so I'm going to try to clean my windshield here a little bit while I'm at it. It's sort of better. Anyways, there is something wrong with my car, and we're not exactly sure what it is yet. And so, I'm playing Russian roulette with my car. And one of these days, I'm going to come out, and it's just not going to work again. I did this for a while with my little Mercedes 300D, my old little Mercedes 300D that I had for a while. That was a fun little car. Old. It was old. I bought it old. My daughter was just ecstatic when she was younger, and I bought that car because we had a Mercedes. Diesel, which meant it just spewed black smoke everywhere. It's the old joke. Two best things about driving a Mercedes diesel is that when you pass gas, no one can smell it and no one can hear it. So anyways, I had this problem with that car for a while where just randomly it would not start. And we finally figured out that it was the switch in the gearbox that is the, whatever they call that, safe switch or whatever it is. It shorted out. And the mechanic found it because he took a screwdriver and stuck it down there and started the car as soon as he got that shorted across the contacts. I'm not sure if that's what it is. I think I had mentioned that my battery, I thought my battery had gone out. It was a 4.5-year-old battery anyway, so I put a new battery in it. Ran rock solid for a week and a half. No problems. Everything was great. Back in the saddle. Ta-ta-da. Well, then last Friday, I went grocery shopping. Everything's great. Back in the saddle. A week ago Friday? I don't know. No, last Friday. And, you know, I came back, parked the car, unloaded the groceries. The car was kind of facing down a little bit because I had backed up into my parents' driveway. And it was facing head down a little bit. And, you know, did all the stuff like I normally do with them, took care of their finances. Grew up, hop in my car. Nothing. Not even ticking. But I had to make a tick sound so you'd know that, you know, have something, because you can't see me moving my hand. But yeah, there was nothing. So I put the car in neutral and let it drift down to the street. Then I got out my parents' car and, you know, did the whole thing with my parents' car. And then speaking of which, I haven't driven my parents' car. I should take their car on Friday when I go grocery shopping. Because that car probably hasn't been started for 2 weeks now. Eek. I gotta do that tomorrow. Anyways, gotta jump. So we got the car jumped, and then I called the mechanic on the way, and they said, well, it's working now. Yep. Can't really do anything till it's broken. It's like, oh. So I'm back in that enviable position of driving around and parking my car and not being sure if it's actually going to start back up when I turn the key. So it started back up when I turned the key, and I had a buddy who was waiting there to jump it if I need jumping, and since it was started, I thought, you know what, I don't think I'm going to turn this off to start the podcast like I normally do. So, there you go. Progress. Making some progress on the new book. Progress. Got the cover in. Just have one more thing. I just got to drop in my granddaughter on the front of the cover, and we're going to do that shoot tomorrow. So that'll be fun. I'm still looking for an apron for her. Some kind of little apron, but I have an idea. We have a party warehouse that has costumes and things, and so they may have an apron down there. And there is another possibility for an apron that we could use. And we may fall back and use that one. But I'm going to check and see if they have a little apron down at the Party City, first of all. And, you know, then we'll go there. Once we have that, then tomorrow afternoon, my son-in-law said he'll help me get a green screen set up with some lights. And then about 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, we're going to bring in the granddaughter. And then Mom will be done from work by then, and so she'll get Clara dressed up in the little outfit we have for her. And she's going to be our sower, because this book is on the parable of the sower. So she's going to be our sower. And I'm pretty happy with the cover. It has worked out. It looks okay. So it's really amazing, because the cover looked good. But then you do that final thing where you put the vignette on it, where it kind of darkens the edges, and you tell it where you want the highlight to be. And so obviously I put the highlight on Clara, and then it just does this gradual fade out and then does a darker vignette around the outside. And man, it just makes everything, you know, it just lifts everything up. So that's fun. And I ordered the proof, well, submitted the files yesterday evening for the proof copy. And so the proof should be coming in on Monday. So I'll have that. Should have the picture of Clara by Friday evening. Drop her into the cover on Saturday. Do whatever final tweaks I'm going to do. Go ahead and submit some more files. Once those get approved, I'll probably just do a digital proof, and then I'll order the 40 copies, because I'm so far behind. And then we'll start, you know, seeing if people are wanting to read this one. I think I've already got close to 20. I may be at 19 beta readers. So it usually doesn't take me very long to get the other 20. I'll start posting at that point. I'll start posting on Facebook and letting people know that it's available for beta reading. And we'll go from there. We'll see. This one's a little long. I feel bad that it's a little long, but, you know, it's 450 pages. The last one was 360, so it's 90 pages longer. But the story is the story, and the story needed to be told, and, you know, ta-da, what are you going to do? So big news there. And then I've got one of my beta readers that I spelled his name wrong. Ugh. On the cover and on the inside when I quoted him of the production version. So he said, oh, that's okay, you can just name a character in the book after me, which I did. One of the minor characters in the books I named after him. But I also need to go and fix it. So I need to backtrack, take a couple hours, backtrack, change his name to where it's right, and then republish all those files, get those all put together. So that's what I'll be doing this weekend. And then if I get all that done, well, then I guess I'll... Oh, taxes is next. Yeah, then I've got to do taxes. So this weekend I may be working on taxes as well. And then once I get taxes done and filed, then it'll be time to start the next one, Windfall, the Shut Door. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Anyways, today I'd like to talk about an article that I read, it's been a couple of weeks ago. These kind of articles make me sad. They just make me sad. Because I read the article, I understand the article, I think I understand what's going on. The article adequately identifies that there is a problem. But the article, I think, really doesn't even get close to addressing the root cause of the problem. And because of that, offers advice that frankly is just bad advice. I get to reading this article and I'm thinking, what? What? And it's written by someone who is obviously an intelligent person. It's written by a writer, someone who has done really well for herself, mainly because Oprah gave her the golden tap. I mean, her books weren't selling at all, and then Oprah fell in love with one of her books and put it on her book club, and then it was like, and I've talked about her in the past, and, you know, because she's very introspective, and she thinks about things, and I think I've done one or two of her podcasts. I did a podcast that she had done a talk at the TED Talks about genius, and that was really good, and she did another talk about writing and how that after the success of her book that Oprah had tapped, everyone had come up to her and said, oh, what are you going to do to top that? And that she had to come to grips with the fact that the book that Oprah had tapped was probably going to be her best-selling book, and she was never going to be able to write something that would sell as many copies as that. But then again, you don't really need to. Because when it sells millions of copies, you're pretty well set if you manage your money well at all. And the author's name is Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love, which is a kind of travel log of her spending a year trying to find herself. And honestly, the movie version of it seems to be pretty honest. And what you come away with in what I haven't read the book, but in seeing the movie, what I came away with is a person who's really trying to find her way in life, trying to find meaning in life, and, you know, manage to find some pacification of her angst and of her distress and find some joy. But I'm not really sure how much at the end of the day, you know, after it's all said and done. I just had supper with a buddy a couple of evenings ago, and he then wrote me about a man whom I respect. He's in England, an English actor, a real thinker, and how this guy, of course, had abandoned his religious upbringing, and he has made the statement that how freeing that was, that he finally did that and threw off all those shackles. And now, I think the article was about the fact that he had a suicide attempt, and in fact that he's bipolar and this, that, and the other, and, you know. And the comment my friend was making was, okay, I understand that he's bipolar, but now that he's talking about the distress that he's having in his life, and now that he's tried to commit suicide, somehow his words about how freeing it was to throw off all the shackles of religion doesn't ring so true. And I wrote back, yeah, you know. And one of the reasons it doesn't is the flesh is more than happy to pat you on the back. I wrote this to him. I said, you know, the flesh is more than happy to pat you on the back and go, good job. Good job. As soon as you throw off the shackles of belief in a God. But then what it does is it slaps you on the back for a while and congratulates you, and then it starts slipping in these comments about, well, life's kind of hopeless then, you know, life's kind of hopeless. And then it just starts grinding you down. But, you know, you can't go back on atheism now because you're not that ignorant. I mean, everybody knows there is no God. Every intelligent, but, I mean, this really kind of makes life hopeless, so I guess you just have to live with the fact that life is hopeless, and then it just grinds you down because its main purpose is your destruction. And so it gets you to believe something that it knows will lead you to destruction, and it excites you. It excites you about this new belief and how great it is. And while it's keeping you excited about that, at the same time, it's just digging in and it's just grinding you down. And when I read articles like this one I'm going to talk about today, I see that mechanism starting, you know, this glimmer of hope that the answer may be over here, when in fact the answer really isn't over there at all. And I feel sad for people who are in this crux and of this crush, where they're floundering around trying to come up with a solution, and they find something that the flesh is willing to give them a little bit of temporary relief about, knowing that while it's doing that, it can just keep grinding them down because they haven't found a real solution yet. So anyways, the article was by Elizabeth Gilbert. Was the best thing you can do for yourself and all the women around you. So this is supposed to be a treatise to give women the solution. The solution. So she starts out by saying, nearly all the women I know are stressing themselves sick over the pathological fear that they simply aren't doing enough with their lives, she said, which is crazy, absolute flat-out bananas, and she's absolutely right about that, and it is absolute flat-out bananas. She said, because the women I know do a lot, and they do it well. She said, my cousin Sarah, for instance, is earning her master's degree in international relationships while simultaneously working for a nonprofit that builds playgrounds at woefully underfunded public schools. Kate, another woman she knows, is staying home and raising two of the most enchanting children I've ever met while also working on a cookbook. Donna is producing Hollywood blockbusters. Stacy is running a London bank. Polly just launched an artisanal bakery. She said, by all rights, every one of these clever, invented women should be radiant with self-satisfaction. And she said, instead, they twitch with near constant doubt, somehow worrying that they are failing at life. Sarah worries that she should be traveling around the world instead of committing to a master's degree. Kate worries that she's wasting her education by staying home with her kids. Donna worries that she's endangering her marriage by working such long hours. Stacy worries that the capitalist world of banking is murdering her creativity. Polly worries that her artisanal bakery might not be quite capitalistic enough. All of them worry that they need to lose 10 pounds. And rightly so, Elizabeth Gilbert says, this is very frustrating for me to witness this. And it's frustrating for her as well, because she said, I do it too. She said, despite the fact I have written 5 books, I worry that I have not written the right kinds of books, or perhaps that I have dedicated too much of my life to writing and have therefore neglected other aspects of my being. Open parenthesis, like, I could really stand to lose 10 pounds. So, here's what she wants to know. This is what she is saying to all the women out there. This is what she's proposing, that the best thing that she can do for herself and all the women around her. It is Can we lighten up a bit? Can we draft a joint resolution to drop the crazy-making expectation that we must all be perfect friends and perfect mothers and perfect workers and perfect lovers with perfect bodies who dedicate themselves to charity and grow our own organic vegetables at the same time that we run corporations and stand on our heads while playing the guitar with our feet? Now, that's very cute. Very cute. Okay. She goes on to say that sometimes she feels like we're all mice in a giant experimental maze, frantically scrambling around trying to find our way through. She said, but there might be a good historical reason for this overwhelming confusion. She said, we don't have role models of educated, autonomous females to imitate. She said, the kind of women we are haven't existed until recently, so nobody's given us a map. And as a result, we race forward, in her words, race forward blindly into this new maze of mistakes. We take sharp turns, hoping to stumble onto an open path, only to bump into dead-end walls and have to back up and start all over again. We push mysterious levers, hoping to earn a award, only to, whoops, that was a suffering button. Okay, well. we'll get back to this, but I don't think it's because they haven't had role models. That's not the root of this. So, in her mind, because of this, then, and to make matters worse, she says we constantly measure ourselves against each other's progress, which is truly a dreadful habit. She said her sister told her about a conversation with a sweet neighbor who, after watching her sister spend an afternoon organizing a scavenger hunt for all the local kids, said sadly, you're such a better mother than I will ever be. At which point my sister grabbed my friend's hand and says, please, let's not do this to each other. Okay? That's the solution. Let's not do this to each other. Okay, so maybe that person will never say that out loud, but guess what? That person is still going to be thinking it. We still have snow on the ground here, which is what all that crunchy is. I'm getting my mail here in just a minute. Still going to be thinking it because you haven't really addressed the root of the problem by saying, oh, let's just not do that. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And so then to help kind of ameliorate that problem, Elizabeth Gilbert, one moment. To sort of ameliorate that problem, that, you know, we compete, women compete with each other, women never think they're doing enough, women, it seems to be in this constant turmoil. To ameliorate that problem, then Elizabeth Gilbert suggests some things that will help. She says, okay, let's just anticipate that we will all disappoint ourselves somehow. Okay, well, you know, that's true. Look, in life, you're going to make mistakes. Then she goes on to say, go ahead and let it happen. Let somebody else be a better mother than you for one afternoon. Let someone else go to art school. Okay, that's not too bad. Let someone else have a happy marriage while you foolishly pick the wrong guy. Backing into my garage. Okay, well, at this point, this is not necessarily going to bring you success if you pick the wrong guy. Especially if you're doing it intentionally. Backing into my garage, trying not to hit anything. And you can say, well, how do we know if it's the wrong guy? Well, there's actually ways to know that. Let's see. She says, well, I've done it. It's survival. While you're at it, take the wrong job, move to the wrong city, lose your temper in front of the boss, quit training for the marathon, wolf down a truckload of cupcakes the day after you start your diet. Blow it all catastrophically. In fact, then start over with good cheer. This is what we must learn to do. This is how we get maps, get charted, by taking wrong turns that lead to surprising passageways that open into unexpected worlds. Okay, well, some of that's good. That's good. So just march on. Future generations will thank you for showing us the way and and beating brave new footpaths out of wonky old mistakes. Fall flat on your face if you must, but please, for the sake of us all, do not stop. Map your own life. Okay, well, okay. You know, some of that's good. But what makes me sad about all of this is that if you understand the mechanisms of flesh and spirit, you don't necessarily have to make tons and tons of stupid mistakes to map out your path in life. I feel like I've kind of been stumbling forward most of my life, but I've been stumbling forward with an important difference. I've been stumbling forward listening to the spirit. It's like working on this cover. Okay, I had been preparing. I didn't start cold on this cover. I knew it was coming up. So every spare moment I had when I thought, oh, I should be looking for pictures, I kind of had an idea of what I was looking for. So I had identified a bunch of pictures. Last week, before I even started the covers, I pulled down the ones that I think thought would be good, put them in a little folder by themselves so I could kind of study them over time. So then I get started last Sunday building this cover. And I start putting the pieces together, and this cover is not coming together. It's just not coming. And I'm working, and I'm working, and I start with the low-res versions I get for free because they have a water stamp on them. I don't just go out and buy a ton of images without knowing whether they're going to work or not. Why? Because that would be foolish. Yeah, okay. Would it help me to go out and just buy a bunch of images? I'm not going to use so I could say, well, I made a bunch of mistakes and I learned from that. Well, no. No, it's not going to help. So I just keep gradually moving forward. Don't get frustrated. Just I'm listening, moving forward a step at a time, listening. And after working for 5 or 6 hours, not feeling like it was really coming together, then it was like, oh, well, you could try that. Oh, hey, I could try that. You know, oh, you could try this. Hey, I could try that. And then all of a sudden it just started going. And then I'm looking at it going, I think that will work. And the longer I work with it, the better it gets. I've never done this cover before. Is the cover perfect? No. Because I know that voice in me that's trying to drive me towards perfection and drive me crazy, that's the flesh. And the real sadness in this article is not addressing the root cause. And the root cause of all this floundering around and being filled with anxiety is the flesh. Because it knows it can get traction, because it knows the average across the board general state of women is to have a certain level of baseline fear. And you're not going to get rid of that fear by just hoping that it goes away. You know, you're not going to get rid of that fear by just saying, well, let's do better. Because the only way to get rid of that fear is to address the underlying cause and recognize that that fear is being voiced by an entity that seeks your destruction. And what you have to do is identify, oh, so this fear is telling me that, you know, I'm earning my master's degree, but maybe I should be traveling the world. And what you have to say is, okay, but I've started this master's degree. There will be a benefit to this when I'm done. I will travel the world after I finish my master's degree. Because just dropping everything to run off to travel the world when I'm working on my master's doesn't make any sense at all. It's just the flesh trying to make me dissatisfied. And that process of identifying those voices within us as to what is flesh and what is spirit, and learning to ignore the flesh learning to just focus our minds over on what is the more productive thoughts. It's like the lady who looks and sees that someone has organized this scavenger hunt. And so she thinks, oh, I'm such a bad mother. Okay, when that thought comes up, instead of dwelling on, oh, I'm such a bad mother, you should just go over to the person who's organizing the scavenger hunt and say, you know, you're doing a great job here. This is really inspiring for me to watch. And maybe at some point, when you do another one of these, maybe we could get together and do it together, because I'd love just a chance to see how you do this and how you come up with ideas, because at some point, I'd kind of like to do some of these too, because I think it's great. You know, so instead of being all inward focus, turn that outward, pay some compliments, get your mind off of that inward focus thing, and say, you know, it's really wonderful that you were able to do this for the children, and I really think they're going to enjoy it, and can I assist you in any way? As opposed to just being all introspective and turned in. Now, really, what is the root? Where does the flesh get so much traction in women? And I personally think that the spot where the flesh gets the most traction with women is the lie that it tells women that they're never going to be safe, that they're never going to have their needs met, that they're never going to be fulfilled in life unless they're queen. Unless everyone else is doing stuff for them. Because then, whenever, if you have that kind of mindset, you know, even though you don't express it, but it's still there, you know, I'm supposed to be the queen. Then anytime you see someone else getting accolades, you know, anytime you see a woman who's accomplishing something better than you are, you know, because, you know, you've got competition for being the queen. And that attitude at the base, at the core, has to be attacked as well. And whenever you feel that, you know, you need to recognize, you know what? She is doing that well. She's doing a great job. That doesn't mean I'm any less safe. That doesn't mean that my needs aren't going to get provided for. And maybe the best way I can provide for my needs is to go out and do stuff for myself, as opposed to waiting for my worshipers to do things for me. So, I mean, there's ways to address these issues and get down to the root of this thing that drives this, I'm not perfect enough. Because the goal is, if I can just get perfect enough, then I'll be safe and I'll be provided for and I'll have a shelter and I'll be loved and I'll be all these things, because I'm not going to be all those things unless I can be queen. And that will drive a person crazy. So in my mind, the real answer here is not, let's just do better. The real answer is, let's just not go out and intentionally make a bunch of mistakes. The real answer is, recognize what the voice of the flesh is and what the voice of the spirit is within you. Move forward listening to the spirit and not the flesh, not the fear, not the anger, not the pride, not the greed, not the angst. And over time, do what you can do to make your situation better, and the rest of it will fall into place. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.